Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. As indicated by this intro music, today's program's a special program devoted to Christmas tunes. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from AARP, the magazine. Question number one, which of these is credited as the very first rock and roll Christmas song? Is it A, Santa Claus is Back in Town by Elvis Presley? Is it B, Jingle Bell Rock by Bobby Helms? Is it C, Run Rudolph Run by Chuck Berry? Is it D, Rockin' Round the Christmas Tree by Brenda Lee? Or is it E, Ave Maria by Maria Callas? First R&R Christmas song, which one was that anyway? And question number two, what's the best-selling Christmas song of all time? Is it A, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? Is it B, White Christmas? Is it C, All I Want for Christmas Is You? Is it D, The Christmas Song, which is also known as Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire? Or is it E, You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch? So, which one is the best-selling Christmas song of all time? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of December 23rd. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1818, that Franz Gruber of Oberndorf, Germany, composed the music for Silent Night to words written by Joseph Mohr. The song was also performed for the very first time on this day in 1818 at the Church of St. Nicholas in that same Austrian town. Silent Night, 1818, today. And it was 63 years ago today, 1959, that Richard Starkey, 18, who later would be known as Ringo Starr, received a drum set for Christmas. Beatles drummer Ringo Starr's first drum set today in 1959.
Choirs will be singing Silent Night, Christmas carols by candlelight. So please come home for Christmas. Please come home for Christmas.
Willie Nelson's cover of Please Come Home for Christmas introduces our country Christmas contribution. Please Come Home for Christmas was born in Cincinnati. This is written by Chris Veria on the 19th of December, 2017, in the Cincinnati Enquirer. Please Come Home for Christmas was written by Charles Brown, an R&B singer and pianist born in Texas City, Texas, on Galveston Bay, who charted several hits in the 1940s and 50s, including another soulful Christmas classic, Merry Christmas Baby. In 1999, the year of Brown's death, he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. According to local music historian Brian Powers, Brown got stuck in Cincinnati at a point in his career when the hits had stopped coming. He was supposedly a horse player. Newport's gambling racket saw its opportunity and compelled Brown to commit to an extended engagement performing in mobbed-up night spots. In 1960, Sid Nathan, the owner of Cincinnati's King Records, asked Brown to write a Christmas song. Nathan was hoping for another hit along the lines of 1947's Merry Christmas, Baby, and that's what he got. Brown recorded Please Come Home for Christmas at the King Studio in Evanston. Please Come Home for Christmas is a very melancholy Christmas song, as the singer has lost his girl and finds himself unbearably lonely over the holidays. It became a holiday smash that year and lives on through versions by the Eagles, Willie Nelson, Bon Jovi, and many, many others.
Christmas and New Year will find you home. And there'll be no more sorrow, no more grief and pain. Be happy this Christmas once again.
Silent Night introduces our classical music contribution. It's entitled The Humble Origins of Silent Night. This is published on December the 6th, 2021, in theconversation.com. Over the centuries, hundreds of Christmas carols have been composed. Many fall quickly into obscurity. Translated into at least 300 languages, designated by UNESCO as a treasured item of intangible cultural heritage, and arranged in dozens of different musical styles, from heavy metal to gospel, Silent Night has become a perennial part of the Christmas soundscape. Its origins, in a small alpine town in the Austrian countryside, were far humbler. The author is a musicologist who studies historical traditions of song, and the story of Silent Night and its meteoric rise to worldwide fame has always been fascinating to him. Fallout from war and famine. The song's lyrics were originally written in German just after the end of the Napoleonic Wars by a young Austrian priest named Joseph Mohr. In the fall of 1816, Mohr's congregation in the town of Mariupfar was reeling. 12 years of war had decimated the country's political and social infrastructure. Meanwhile, the previous year, one historians would later dub the year without a summer, had been catastrophically cold. The eruption of Indonesia's Mount Tanbora in 1815 had caused widespread climate change throughout Europe. Volcanic ash in the atmosphere caused almost continuous storms, even snow in the midst of summer. Crops failed, and there was widespread famine. Mohr's congregation was poverty-stricken, hungry, and traumatized, so he crafted a set of 6 poetic verses to convey hope that there was still a God who cared. Mohr, a gifted violinist and guitarist, could have probably composed the music for his poem, but instead he sought help from a friend. In 1817, Mohr transferred to the parish of St. Nicholas in the town of Obendorf, just south of Salzburg. There he asked his friends Franz Xaver Gruber, a local schoolteacher and organist, to write the music for the 6 verses. On Christmas Eve, 1818, the two friends sang Silent Night together for the first time in front of Mohr's congregation, with Mohr playing his guitar. The song was apparently well received by Mohr's parishioners, most of whom worked as boat builders and shippers in the salt trade that was central to the economy of the region. The melody and harmonization of Silent Night is actually based on an Italian musical style that mimics the sound of water and rolling waves. In this way, Gruber's music reflected the daily soundscape of Moore's congregation, who lived and worked along the Salzach River. But in order to become a worldwide phenomenon, Silent Night would need to resonate far beyond Obendorf. According to a document written by Gruber and two traveling families of folk singers, the Strassers and the Rainers included the tune in their shows. The song then became popular across Europe and eventually in America, where the Rainers sang it on Wall Street in 1839. At the same time, German-speaking missionaries spread the song from Tibet to Alaska and translated it into local languages. By the mid-19th century, Silent Night had even made its way to subarctic Inuit communities along the Labrador coast. The lyrics of Silent Night have always carried an important message for Christmas Eve observances in church around the world. But the song's lilting melody and peaceful lyrics also remind us of a universal sense of grace that transcends Christianity and unites people across cultures and faiths. Perhaps at no time in the song's history was this message more important than during the Christmas truce of 1914, when at the height of World War I, German and British soldiers on the front lines in Flanders laid down their weapons on Christmas Eve and together sang Silent Night. The song's fundamental message of peace, even in the midst of suffering, has bridged cultures and generations. Great songs do this. They speak of hope in hard times and of beauty that arises from pain. They offer comfort and solace, and they are inherently human and infinitely adaptable.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe she'd been drinking too much eggnog, and we begged her not to go. But she forgot her medication, and she staggered out the door into the snow.
And representing the novelty Christmas song genre, there's this article in NBCDFW.com, published on the 8th of December, 2015. It's the classic holiday song with an unfortunate ending for Grandma. Back in 1977, Dallas resident Randy Brooks was getting ready for bed when he had a thought. I always say I went to bed with my guitar and my co-writer, Johnny Walker Black, and I sat there and asked myself, how would Grandma die at Christmas time? Brooks said. It may seem morbid, but Brooks said he was tired of the old country classics. One of those country songs where they drag you into love with a character and then kill them off in the third verse. I just thought, I'm tired of that. So he came up with the lyrics to Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, telling the story of a grandma who drank too much eggnog and had an unfortunate run-in while Santa's sleigh. By chance, Brooks said the group Elmo and Patsy heard him perform it at a show and asked if they could record the song and sell copies of it at their own shows. Brooks gave them permission. And a few months later, a disc jockey at a San Francisco radio station played the song on air. All hell broke loose. The phones at KSFO started ringing off the hook. Most people saying, don't ever play that song again. But other people said, oh, do play it again. Brooks said different news outlets and radio stations started saying, where can we get a copy of the record? They couldn't press them fast enough, Brooks said. Brooks said by 1983 it was the most popular holiday tune that year, and soon the song evolved into cartoons, toys, and even clothes. This year there's a Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer hot chocolate mix, he said, laughing. I guess it's hard to remember life without it, Brooks said. The record eventually went gold and platinum over the years. Now, nearly four decades later, I would like to think that it's a part of holiday tradition and just be happy to hear it. This Christmas novelty tune genre dates back to such hits as Nothing for Christmas and All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth, and expanded into such songs as The Chipmunk Song and, of course, Singing Dog's Jingle Bells. I'll spare you those. And in local music news, we have this article titled, Butchering the Classics and Loving It. Meet the Triangle's Really Terrible Orchestra. This is written by Josh Schaefer, News and Observer, 13th of December, 2022. The Really Terrible Orchestra of the Triangle 2022 concert was scheduled for Wednesday, December 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Cary Arts Center. This story was originally published November 28, 2022, and as noted in a caption under a photograph accompanying the story, the Really Terrible Orchestra of the Triangle rehearses for its holiday concert, made up entirely of amateur musicians whose lack of skill is exaggerated. The orchestra distributes kazoos to the audience for its rendition of the Hallelujah Chorus. In 2008, a retired software architect with a treble clef tattooed on his shoulder launched his own amateur orchestra, inviting 50-odd closeted musicians to dust off their cellos and pull bassoons out of their attics. He called it the Really Terrible Orchestra of the Triangle, or R-T-O-O-T for short, R-Toot. And it quickly grew into a musical community where nobody cared if your French horn warbled out of tune, your clarinet skipped the hard notes, or your violist came to practice sporting a propeller beanie. W. Sands Hobgood, Jr., who died in 2016, took deep pride in his band's lack of virtuosity, bragging that R-Toot had corporate presidents and a roller derby professional in its ranks. Maestro is spelled Maestro, S-T-R-O-W, he explained in a short documentary, or Maestro, S-T-R-O-H, if you happen to be a beer drinker. And on December 7, when R-Toot holds its holiday concert, the orchestra will hold its relaxed musical tradition by inviting the audience to play along during the Hallelujah Chorus on kazoos they pass out. We joke in our concerts to turn your cell phone on, said violist Douglas Payne, to distract from the music. The Really Terrible Orchestra takes inspiration from a Scotland-based group of the same name, profiled in the New York Times and featuring a bassoonist unable to play a C-sharp. We don't care. And while really terrible might be an exaggeration, conductor Robert Petters has been known to turn away musicians for possessing too much talent. Beethoven might not actually roll over, but he probably makes a face. We allow mistakes, Petters said at last week's practice. There's some people who don't play all of the notes, and if we pass over some, we don't care. R-Toot's goal lies in pulling symphonic music off its pedestal and placing in the hands of anyone able to breathe and read music at the same time. Performers wear sparkling tiaras and sometimes bunny ears to the concerts. Some of the 98 members picked up their violin bows late in life, while others are reigniting musical brain cells gone dormant since middle school. Hardly anyone flunks the audition, so the instrument mix depends on who shows up. Last week, French horns outnumbered trumpets, and R-Toot boasted as many bassoonists as clarinetists. but they launch fearlessly into Mussorgsky's Night on Bald Mountain, which presents a violin player with a dizzying string of 16th notes. "This is kicking my butt," said Debbie Moose, the freelance food writer formerly of the NNO, who only took up her instrument at age 50. "I just kind of wave at it as it goes by. Air fiddling is acceptable." Sleigh Ride, which R. Toot plays in its holiday sing-along, calls for a loud crack to stimulate the sound of a buggy whip, a task normally handled by a percussionist with a pair of boards. Lacking that equipment in last week's practice, the timpani player simply yelled, "Whip!" at the appropriate moment. "We don't want to raise expectations too high," Moose said. "What do they say in business? Under-promise and over-deliver. So warm up your kazoo and come out to Artoot's big gig, knowing that some of the melodies will probably manage to fight their way out of the cacophony. And even if they don't, the players will probably be available to sign autographs afterwards. Maybe they'll even sign your kazoo." So for more information about this local orchestra, go to rtoot.org. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, which of these is credited as the very first rock and roll Christmas song? Was it A, Santa Claus is Back in Town by Elvis Presley? Was it B, Jingle Bell Rock by Bobby Helms? Was it C, Run Rudolph Run by Chuck Berry? Was it D, Rockin' Round the Christmas Tree by Brenda Lee? Or was it E, Ave Maria by Maria Callas? Correct answer? Answer A, Elvis's Santa Claus is Back in Town. As noted in songfacts.com, Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller wrote this song for Elvis in 1957, just after they finished working with him on songs for his film, Jailhouse Rock. He was working on his first Christmas album when a call came in that they desperately needed one more song to complete it. Lieber and Stoller could write very quickly, so they found a utility closet, put the song together in a very short time. Stoller said it was 8 minutes, and presented it to Elvis's manager, Colonel Tom Parker. "What took you so long, boys?" Parker asked, and the songwriting team responds, wait for it, "Writer's block." Parker didn't even crack a smile. By the way, the movie star Mae West did a saucy cover of this song for her 1966 album, Wild Christmas. And the answer to our second question, what's the best-selling Christmas song of all time? Was it A, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, B, White Christmas, C, All I Want for Christmas is You, D, The Christmas Song, which is also known as Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire, or was it E, You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch? Correct answer, answer B, White Christmas. As noted in songfacts.com, for the Holiday Inn 1942 film, Irving Berlin had to write a song for each holiday for the entertainers to perform at the Holiday Inn. By the way, the Holiday Inn hotel chain took its name from the movie, which wasn't founded until a decade later. White Christmas was just an 8-line song that paints a picture of holiday nostalgia in which Bing Crosby sings it from the perspective of a New Yorker stranded in sunny California during Christmas. Crosby recorded a version of the song for release as a single a few months before the movie hit theaters, starting with the familiar I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas. The song became a huge hit, going to number one on the Billboard chart in October and staying in the top spot for 11 weeks, taking it through the first 2 weeks of 1943. The song enjoyed a sales resurgence every Christmas after it was first released in 1942. The song appeared on Billboard charts every year until 1963, when it finally dropped off the Hot 100, a perennial seller for an entire generation. The song is by far the biggest-selling Christmas song of all time. In 1954, Paramount Pictures released a movie called White Christmas to tie in with the song. Crosby starred in the film along with Danny Kaye. White Christmas won the Academy Award for Best Song of 1942. According to Mark Steins, a song for the season, Berlin was in a hurry that Monday morning and shouted at his musical secretary, "Grab your pen and take down this song. It's the best song I ever wrote. Hell, it's the best song anybody ever wrote." She notes that White Christmas owes much of its enduring popularity to World War II, specifically the attack on Pearl Harbor that led to U.S. involvement, because the song adopted a significance beyond the reaches of Hollywood. 1942 was the American servicemen's first Christmas away, in the Pacific, under glorious sunny skies that only made home seem even more distant. This song also has the distinction of marking the end of American involvement in the Vietnam War. On April 29, 1975, as the North Vietnamese surrounded Saigon, an evacuation plan was put into effect to bring the remaining Americans to safety. Their cue to evacuate was an announcement on the American radio service stating that the temperature in Saigon was 105 degrees and rising, followed by the playing of Bing Crosby's White Christmas. That was the signal for the mad dash to 14 evacuation points where helicopters were waiting. The song was chosen because it stood out. There was no chance of it getting played in April unless something was up. Also, everyone knew it. Otis Redding recorded a soulful rendition. In 1968, this version was featured in the 2003 Christmas movie Love Actually. So let's close out today's program with that Bing Crosby number one Christmas tune, White Christmas.
Just like the ones I used to know.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, and Merry Christmas. Until next time.